Hello, and welcome to The Developmental Edit. I'm your host, Christine Petty, from Last Page Editorial, and I'm here to help you write books readers can't put down. Today, I wanted to come to you with another, I'm not really sure what to call it, because I don't really have a name for it yet, but I guess world-building tidbit would suffice, about the art of the epigraph. And just in case you're not sure what I mean when I say epigraph, an epigraph is what you sometimes see at the beginning of a chapter or a section in a novel, usually, but it doesn't have to be a novel. It could be a nonfiction as well. But it's the quote that they will put at the beginning of a chapter. It's used often in science fiction and fantasy, but it could be used across genres. For example, I've seen it in nonfiction. You could use it in romance. You could use it in mystery or thriller. There's just a ton of different ways you can use it. Some people like them, some people don't like them. I personally kind of like them just because I like quotes. I think they're interesting. And usually the epigraph will give you some kind of a clue as to what that chapter is going to be about. It can be very on the nose. It can be just kind of vague. But if you're into that kind of thing, this episode is going to be how you can write your own epigraphs. Now, they can be real quotes. So for example, if you're writing something that's set in modern fiction, or it could be historical fiction as well, you could use historical quotes from famous people or letters or other books from that time period. You could use song lyrics, you could use real quotes. Anything that basically deals with that chapter or section's theme, you can use. Or you can make up your own epigraphs, which a lot of times, especially if you're writing in science fiction or fantasy or dystopian things, since those things are sometimes based in things that are really happening, but it's futuristic or it's got magical elements, then it would be something that you could add as a world-building exercise. Now, I personally think that all epigraphs are a world-building technique because basically you are leading the reader into your story or your book, and you're using these as kind of like signposts or clues as to what they're going to be getting into next. It's a good way to pique their interest, and I don't know, it's kind of like, I consider them Easter eggs, but not in the, I guess, traditional sense of what Easter eggs are when you're looking in the actual story itself. But I really like them, and as far as world building goes, they can be really useful. So if you're going to be writing your own epigraphs, well, if you're going to write a book and you decide to use epigraphs, I would wait until you've written it and you have all your chapters and all your sections, and then go back and think about what quotes would work for each chapter or section that you're trying to put an epigraph on. I wouldn't start by picking out quotes and then trying to fill in chapters. I feel like it should go in the reverse. So write your book, get your story on the page, get your ideas on the page, and then go back and find what fits. Like I said, there's a plethora of different things that you can use if you're writing and you want to use something that's a real quote that somebody's actually said in our world, or like song lyrics are really great. You can use those things. Of course, you have to make sure that you're attributing it to the correct person. And if it's from a book that they've read or a song or whatever it is, you would want to make sure that you had that listed as well, as accurately as possible. There's a ton of websites out there that you could use to look up quotes. So if you're writing about love, obviously, like, there's a bajillion quotes out there about love, and you could just look it up on Google and just be like, quotes about love, quotes about heartbreak, or whatever the version of love you're exploring in your book, and you will find plenty to choose from. Same thing for pretty much any topic you can think of. They actually, if you're really nerdy like me, you may have a book of quotes that's like a dictionary based on topics, and each topic has like pages and pages of quotes about that topic in that book. I don't have that dictionary of quotes anymore, and I'm very sad about it, but they do exist, so you could get that. But like I said, the internet is probably in your back pocket and right at your fingertips, so you can use that as well. Now, if you are wanting to create your own epigraphs because you are writing science fiction, fantasy, dystopian, or anything else where you just want to do that. You could even use it. I think it'd be kind of cool if you had, it could just be like a modern novel. It could be a YA novel or whatever. And you have a mix of real quotes or song lyrics and then like things that the characters would have said to each other. And you can like, or like a text message that they sent to each other or just anything like that. That is just like an extra world building thing that you could add in there. And so, yeah, you can do it like that. But basically, you're going to need to look at a few things first to see what you want to, your epigraph to say if you're writing it yourself. The first thing is, who is writing the epigraph? And I don't mean you, I mean which character in this world that you're creating, which character is writing the epigraph? What is their position in this world? Are they a teacher? Are they a leader? Is it a family member writing to another family member or a friend? Is it a general of an army? I know in the recent, in Fourth Wing and Iron Flame, the book two, there is an epigraph at the beginning of each chapter, and it could be something from a general. It could be something from her brother's journal. And those are really fun. So basically, who is writing it and what is their position in that world? Then you need to figure out who is their intended audience. Does it mean that that's the audience that is definitely going to read it, but who are they writing to? Who do they think is going to be reading it? Is it going to be students of theirs? Is it going to be a family member or a friend? Is it someone that it's like highly classified information and it's going to from one general to another or something like that? So basically, who is writing and who are they writing to? Those are both questions that you need to answer before you move on to the next bit, which is, what is the purpose of their writing? Are they instructing the person they're writing to? Are they just trying to share information or share something about their lives? Are they doing anything that has to do with propaganda? Is it going to be something that they believe is public knowledge that anyone can read? And so they're going to have a more formal tone, or maybe they're going to be more politically correct in their particular world that you're creating? Or is it something that is a more private correspondence, in which case they might have more candor in what they're writing? They might be sarcastic. They might even be ugly about certain topics. So it depends on who they think their audience is. And then finally, yes, the subject of what they're writing about. So if they're writing about a particular battle, or if they're writing about a particular incident in the family or whatever it is, that's going to be important, because all of these things that you're taking into account, the who, the other who, the purpose and the subject, is going to influence the tone of what they're writing. And it helps you find their voice. So if you know that it's a general writing to another general, that's going to have a very different tone than a teenager sending a text to their love interest, or an instructor writing a text, like a book, like a textbook for their students. So all of those things that we were talking about is going to influence the tone of how you're writing it. And then that can give you the voice of that character, because a lot of times the epigraphs in the world that you're building, it may be written by someone that we don't actually get to see or know in the story. It may be someone that's kind of like for example, in Harry Potter, you know, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them was written by Newt Scamander, but that was written way before Harry's time. And so like they use it as a textbook, but until we see the movie Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, we didn't know Newt at all. And so it's one of those things where the characters writing the epigraphs that you're using, they're not writing them as epigraphs, they're writing them in that world that you're building. And you're going to need to know who they are and what they're about, what their purpose is and their intent. And then that influences their tone. And that's just a little peek into the world that makes it expand for the reader. But it doesn't necessarily have to be from a character that we actually get to know. Now, you could, of course, create a spinoff where we do get to know those characters. Or I gotta come up with better examples than just Harry Potter. But for example, what's that book of the fairy tales that they have in the world? I can't remember. Hold on, I'm gonna look it up. Okay, so it's the Tales of Beedle the Bard. Now, again, that was just a book that happened to be in the world and then later was turned into an actual book with actual fairy tales that J.K. Rowling just wrote, which was really cool. And another one that did that it's like in the Grishaverse basically, but Leigh Bardugo wrote, oh my gosh. And if you haven't read Leigh Bardugo's short stories, do yourself a favor and go find her short story collections because they're brilliant. I love her short stories. I love her writing in general, but she really shines in her short stories. She has one about the lives of the saints in the Grishaverse, which is really interesting. They're like 1 to 3 pages each or something like that. And the world building is amazing. And then you have, there's just another book of fairy tales called, The Book of Thorns or something like that. I can't remember. Hold on. Okay. Sorry. It's The Language of Thorns. Oh my gosh. Anyway, like I said, those are actually just short stories that she's written that are like fairy tales. But you could basically, so imagine that your epigraph is an excerpt from a book or a letter or a correspondence of some kind. It could be from propaganda. It could be from a speech, whatever it is that actually exists in its full form in the world that you've created. And later you can go back and write these spinoffs, and that's really fun. And that's an extra tidbit that you can use. Some people I know do different things for Kickstarters, or they do different things for their patrons on Patreon, where they give these little, you know, inner glimpses into the world based on those types of things. So it could be really fun, and you can expand it from an epigraph into something larger, which is really fun for your readers. And it's, like I said, it's an Easter egg, it's a treat. So anyway, those are the things that you need to consider when you're writing. And those are just like a handful of examples. I've seen it in, I know at the, for example, at the beginning of Dune, every chapter has something, and they're all written by the same character in that world. I'm probably not saying her name correctly, but Princess Irulan. And apparently she just wrote a ton of books about Paul Atreides. And so each chapter begins with a quote from one of the many books that she wrote about him. And it just kind of helps build this myth of who Paul Atreides was and the influence he had on their world. And it's just a really good world building technique. So you could have a bunch of different things all written by the same character and like put out into the world in that world. And you're just taking excerpts from different books, or you could have a bunch of different things from different people. So as an example, and this is kind of a silly example, but that's okay. This is not actually written for a story. As the backstory, just to let you know. So basically, I was in a text message. It was a group message between me and two other people. And one of the people loves to garden, and he was planting things, and he was talking about his daikons. Now, at this time, I did not know what a daikon was because I don't eat radishes. I don't come from a family that eats radishes. Nobody that I know eats radishes or talks about them. And we don't have any names for specific radishes beyond the word radish. And so I had no idea what a daikon was. And so he was talking about them, but didn't give me any context whatsoever. And I was like, hey guys, what's a daikon? And nobody texted me back because they were at work. And this was like the middle of the day. So I was like, okay. And then I just started playing with it. And I was like, okay, so I don't know what a daikon is, but let me see what I can come up with. And I texted this to them. And I'm just going to read you the text that I ended up writing, which was like a couple of paragraphs long. I said, I don't know what a daikon is. I'm imagining it to be a small woodland creature that evolved from a line of dragons that had been diminishing in size after being domesticated in Scandinavia sometime around the 4th century BCE. Raised mainly for their spicy flavor and ability to keep the fires going in winter, they are also quite prickly and have other relatives that are described as being rather nutty in flavor, though this is probably due to diet rather than the inherent quality of their meat. Most people don't know about the daikon and how their meat changes flavor depending on diet, though there have been rumors of a citrus daikon found in South America. Floridians have been trying to reproduce this effect in their own daikon herds, parentheses, the correct name for which is actually a, quote, circus of daikons, due to the short but popular use of daikons in traveling shows in the mid-16th century, which ended within less than a decade after an unfortunate series of fires burned down most of northeastern Europe, blamed on the daikon, but never proven, as scholars disagree whether the fire-breathing element had been bred out of the daikon population by this time. Close parentheses. However, a true citrus daikon prefers low foothills to the beaches of Florida, thus the results have never been satisfactory. Now, that's just a silly example of me going on a tangent in a text message to my friends because I was just feeling silly that day. But actually, it was kind of fun and a lot of thought went into it. So, for example, when I was talking about a line of dragons that had diminished in size, that idea came to me because of what they said happened in Game of Thrones, where like the dragons got really tiny, apparently. And then I figured, okay, what's a place that has dragons, but we don't. It's not as mainstream. We don't know as much about that culture. Scandinavia, okay, and it would have to be a long time ago, so 4th century BCE. And then why would they be domesticating these dragons? Well, maybe they were hunting them for their meat, but also dragons breathe fire. And it just kind of went on from there. So I actually had to look some things up in order to finish writing this series of texts to people. I was just like Googling things, and then I was like, oh, what would like a flock of daikons be called? Like these tiny dragons, like, but what would you call them? Because like a murder of crows, you know, like what would you call daikons? And I was like, well, if they were dragons and they were smaller, they would probably be used in like traveling circuses. So we could call it a circus of daikons. And then, like I said, it just kind of went on from there. And so each new little idea was sparking more things for me to write about it. And I decided just to kind of write it like an encyclopedia, like a Wikipedia entry about daikons. It wasn't until after I sent these texts that my friends were like, "That's it's a radish." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool. Radishes, awesome." But I had like a lot of fun writing it, and my friends liked it too. They were really excited about it. It was kind of funny. Anyway, so that's just a silly example. But if it's something that you would like to try yourself, pick a topic. Pick a word that you're not familiar with. I would suggest a noun, but just pick something that you aren't really that familiar with that you could just kind of play around with and decide who is writing, who's the intended audience, what's the purpose of their writing, and then what tone is it going to have? And just kind of play around with it and see. It could be really fun, and I think writing epigraphs takes a little bit of practice, but with practice, you can get really good at it. And like I said, it's gonna just kind of add depth and layers to this world that you're creating, whether it's, like I said, science fiction, fantasy, or something modern. It could be something that just really delights your readers, I think. I wouldn't suggest making up your own epigraphs if you're writing nonfiction, because you're writing nonfiction. But yeah. I think epigraphs across the board, whether they're made up quotes or things that people have actually said in our world, are just a great way to add something to your story. So, with that being said, I will end today's episode and I hope that you enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening and I hope you found something helpful in it. And if you'd like to work with me on a developmental edit of your manuscript or on coaching you through the creative process of writing your book, please come and find me at my website, lastpageeditorial.com. You can also email me, Christine at lastpageeditorial, or find me on Instagram at lastpageeditorial. And I would love to talk to you and connect. So if you liked this episode, please share it with someone who might benefit from it, who might be interested in this type of stuff, even though sometimes it's silly. And you can leave me a review, which would be super helpful and amazing. Thank you so much. Or otherwise, you know, like, share, subscribe, hit a button. And I hope that you have a week where you write something, even if it's just something small, that delights you and will delight your readers. Have a great week, and I will come back soon with another episode.
This is the end of the show. I hope you liked it. This is the end of the show. I hope you found it somewhat helpful. And if you have any questions or you just like to connect, I'm on Instagram at Last Page Editorial. Have a great day.